Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 103. And we are live on a range of different platforms. I am just muting myself now. I've seen that it's all working. The problem with going live on numerous platforms is sometimes they don't all work, but tonight we are steaming ahead. Everything is going to plan for once because we're live on DLive, we are live on Odyssey, and we are live, as always, on RadioAlbion.com, which is the home of Sven Longshanks. Please support RadioAlbion.com and support me on Odyssey. Now, the replay of this show will be available on BitChute and Odyssey, and those are the places where you can find full archives of all of my videos. Now, people may have noticed in the time between the last episode of PWR and this episode, I have finally been removed from YouTube. I'm no longer on YouTube. I got a notification saying, basically, I had a number of severe violations all on the same day. My account was completely clean, but I got a number of severe violations all on the same day. They said I could appeal this if I wanted to. I wrote to them to appeal this, and they said, well, you can't appeal something that you don't even have an account for. So they claimed that then I didn't even have an account. It was complete scandal. Obviously, they've done this to many people before. I was expecting it. I don't know how I held on for so long, maybe because I'd already moved a lot of my content elsewhere and was only doing my movie reviews and my gaming up there. Generally speaking, all political content was already being streamed or posted elsewhere, but I am finally gone. So if you are one of the stragglers who still doesn't follow me on BitChute, still doesn't follow me on Odyssey, now is the time. Now, if you'd like to contribute to tonight's show, please contribute through Entropy, the free speech alternative. Now, the Entropy link is in the description of the video on Odyssey. Jason will be spamming it in the DLive chat, and it's also on my Telegram and my Gab. And Telegram and Gab are the places to follow me if you want relatively frequent micro-blogging or little bits of information about what I'm up to and where I will be appearing. You can also support my work via a range of different cryptocurrencies. My crypto addresses are, again, on my Gab, on my Telegram, on my BitChute, or you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you want to donate in other ways or want cryptos that aren't listed. I accept every single crypto, and if you want the address for a less common one, please message me. Now, before we get on to our excellent special guest tonight, I have a couple of announcements. The lighthearted one is coming first. On Sunday night, we are back for our monthly Warzone tournament. Now, we've had a few problems with that, most notably that it fell on Easter Sunday, and it also fell on the Sunday of the Super Bowl. So numbers have been a bit depressed, but hopefully we can get numbers back up this time. It'll be the first time that won't be shown on YouTube. It'll be shown on DLive and Odyssey. But if you want to join in, check my Telegram and my Gab for the different details you'll need to get involved. And if you want to watch, that's also great. Now, on to the other news. As you will have probably heard, last week, Laura Towler and Sam Melia, well, it's Laura Melia really because they're married, but Laura and her husband were raided by the police. Sam was arrested. He was arrested in public at the local post office as he was taking some parcels there. They dragged him off. They took his house key. They entered Laura's house. They took all their devices, including hers, even though the search warrant wasn't in her name. That's completely illegal, by the way, completely illegal. They have done terrible things to this couple. Now, obviously, people have been messaging me. People have been saying, will there be a fundraiser? Will there be a way that you can donate? Well, this Friday is the PA monthly update. We do a monthly update on what Patriotic Alternative has been up to. However, this month's monthly update is going to be changed. It is going to be a special stream about Sam's arrest and Laura and Sam being raided by the police. And we're going to go through all of the different illegal things the police actually did. And we have taken legal advice. So that'll be a special stream. It will be Sunday night, 7 p.m. on DLive and Odyssey. I will be announcing the links to that tomorrow. We will be announcing all of that tomorrow, and there'll be a mass email going out to the PA mailing list. There will also be a special fundraiser. That stream will be going out on Entropy 2, and anyone that donates to the Friday stream, all donations will be going to Sam. So that will be a special night. And if you want to contact Laura, she is already back on Telegram. Her cryptos are well known. She's on Subscribestar. If you want to donate to Sam, you can do so through Laura. Obviously, they're a married couple, so you know where the money's going. But there will be a special stream Friday night, and there will also be a fundraiser on Friday. So instead of doing the PA update, that's what we'll be doing. And sadly, Sam competed in the Warzone tournament. Every month, he was somebody who always took part, but he won't be taking part this Sunday because the police are not only cowardly, they're not only lawbreakers, but they are spiteful too. They confiscated his PS4. So there will be a man down for the Warzone tournament. So the Warzone tournament will be held in honor of our comrade who is MIA. He will be watching with Laura on the sofa. But unfortunately, he won't be taking part because the police are cowards. They are reprehensible, but they're also very spiteful too. Now, before we get on to our excellent special guest tonight and get on to the news topics, let's just jump over to Jason. What have you been up to this week, my friend? And who is on the after party? And when is the after party?
Well, the week has been very busy, as it is always, and I'm delighted to be here with you all. I first want to say a big sorry to you, and my heart goes out to you, Mark, for you losing that work on YouTube. The anti-whites very often act like there is nothing here when you're censored. Of course, if it were reversed, they would be crying crocodile tears about their being censored and the like. But this is a person's work. This is their time. This is their effort where they have built a persona, a face, a place. And to have that snipped away is to have all of those hours of your life taken away. And so I deeply sympathize. I won't even mention the censorship that I have had over the past couple of weeks as well. Things are ticking up. And again, my heart goes out to Sam and Laura. Absolutely despicable. There have been raids all over the United States as well, as we have been talking about and predicting before they even begun here in the United States. And when I heard about Sam and Laura, I immediately tried to reach out to them. And of course, to no avail, because it was landing in some British police officer storage room, I imagine, is where all the messages were going. Despicable. My heart goes out to the both of you. And so very sorry that the anti-whites are ruining, troubling, upsetting your life the way they are right now for no reason other than your love for our people, our history, our identity, and your desire to preserve those things. Shocker that somebody would want to do that. And of course, the police departments there in the UK would be totally for it if it were for non-white people, preserving their people, ennobling, projecting, magnifying their people. The after party is going to be, we will have to be tomorrow. We don't know who the guest is just yet, but we'll figure something out. Me and Mr. George, we always do. We make it happen. Let me quickly turn around right here and I will get the name of Jerome V. Jerome V is a content producer in service to white well-being, and I will drop his link in the live chat along, obviously, with Mark's Entropy over the course of the stream. Let's see. I just posted yesterday a magnificent cutout that Mr. George did of the a Going Free episode where the great Eminent Rain, a professional musician, he would be a multi-million dollar professional musician if it were not for the fact that he cares about white people. He would live in a lavish mansion. He would have gone through several wives already and probably several dozen girlfriends. He's a magnificent guy. He is the quality of Iron Maiden and better. And he's making an entire album dedicated to my book, Prometheus Rising, Take Back Your Destiny, because it has meant so much to him. Well, he and Groundhog Fury, a digital artist par excellence, and I don't say that with any exaggeration or hyperbole, they both are in that clip. That's just from yesterday. Giving their testimonials about Going Free and more specifically about Prometheus Rising, Take Back Your Destiny, and what it has meant for them spiritually. And I guess, let's see, what else did I want to say here? Oh, prior to the show today, folks, there were about 100 of you who came over to my platforms with the exception of YouTube, and we were rocking out prior to the show and conversating and having a hell of a good time listening to rock and roll regime, mainstream rock and roll. If you want to participate next week, if I'm early, I'll have the rock going and you can jump on over to my platforms and participate in the conversation. And finally, I want to say really big welcome to my dear, dear friend, James Edwards. He and his family are some of the greatest people you will ever meet in your entire life. And more importantly, over the course of this stream, I want you all to do this. This would be my one suggestion. I'm going to pass it over to Mark so we can get rolling here. And that is this. James Edwards and his lovely family have been through more hell than anybody else. They have had bigger entities come down on them than anybody else. And they, in part because of their faith in Jesus Christ, have been able to endure the tribulations, endure the trauma that the anti-whites have heaped upon them, the focus. This man right here, ladies and gentlemen, especially for all of you guys out there, a gorgeous wife. A gorgeous wife. No need to think that, well, you have to cuck on your beliefs about our people in order to get a good wife, a wonderful wife, a beautiful family. I mean, talk about a beautiful family. All smiles, all good memories they make every single day of their life. If you want somebody to imitate moving forward as things get tougher in the world, we see just right now Mark talking about his YouTube channel, Sam and Laura, and so many others right now going through hell. This is the guy to emulate, and I pass it back.
Thank you, Jason.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I'm going to introduce our special guest now, and it's James Edwards. Now, James is a difficult man to introduce, not because he hasn't done many things, but because he's actually done so much, it would be impossible to list it all. This man is a well-renowned speaker. He's spoken all over the United States. He's been a speaker at AMREN. He is a published author, and he has one of the most famous radio shows on the dissident right, the Political Cesspool. And this radio show has been going for almost 17 years. Now, that is an incredible achievement. That is an incredible commitment to our cause. But not only that, James has been in the firing line, both him and his family, so much so that it would actually be impossible to list the number of different media agencies, shows, and talk shows that he's been on, different news shows that he's been on over the last, the best part of two decades. James is a tireless warrior for our cause. He's an honorable man. He's a family man. And he does so much. As I said, I just can't list it all. But I hope James will take some time to do that. James, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here tonight on PWR. And I hope you will tell our audience how we can find you, how we can support your work, a bit about your book, a bit about your radio show, and just introduce them to everything you do.
Thank you so much, Mark and Jason, for an incredible introduction. After nearly 20 years in this, I don't know if I have ever been introduced so kindly and courteously. Thank you again, and for the honor to be on PWR. Yes, just to get all of the introductory facts out of the way. I got my start when I was 19 years old working for Pat Buchanan. And it was with Pat that I served on his final run for the presidency in 2000. That was when he ran as an independent candidate, or with the Reform Party, rather. And I had the opportunity that year to travel the country. I was a national committeeman and a delegate for the Reform Party nominating convention, which was unique in that the Reform Party was still getting federal matching funds. And so Pat was, you know, had ballot access across the country. But that's where I got my start and cut my teeth. And I'd met so many great people as a result of that campaign. I wanted to keep the band together. I had at that point sort of gotten a little bit of this into my blood. And even though I was still evolving in some ways, as you do at that point in your life, in your late teens, early 20s, evolving into who I would become, I knew I wanted to remain involved. And so I had the opportunity to meet wonderful men and women from across the country. And I put forth my own candidacy, and I ran for the Tennessee State Legislature in 2002. So I was 21. I turned 22 that summer. And we ran a real campaign. Again, I was a little bit too naive to believe that if we worked hard enough, we could win as an independent candidate, running in a three-way race, running against the Speaker of the House. If we just worked hard enough, we would win. But it wasn't for lack of effort or lack of professionalism. We had a campaign headquarters. We had a phone line. We had we put a campaign headquarters into one of these strip malls, and we worked day and night. It was a unique point in my life before I was married. And when I still had enough college-aged friends to where you could get a group of a dozen, 15, 20 people any given day or weekend and go out and knock on doors and tell people about your platform and why you were running. And even though that particular bid fell short, it was a wonderful experience in terms of organizing and going out and getting more comfortable and confident talking in front of people and being, you know, getting some press coverage. We received the royal we, I guess you could say, 20% of the vote, nearly 20% of the vote in a three-way race, which I believe at the time, and maybe still to this day, is the most an independent candidate had ever gotten for that particular seat, running for a seat in the state house. And so we had made just enough of a name in the local community to where in 2004 I got a call to start a radio program. And I'd never known anything about broadcast radio. I didn't go to any sort of broadcasting school or go to college to, you know, to be a communications major or anything like that. But I was looking for open doors and ways to apply myself. But I knew if I took this opportunity, which I was very interested in doing, I wanted to be different. I didn't want to be the local Rush Limbaugh. Everybody's the aspiring Rush Limbaugh, where you just read the typical cookie cutter conservative talking points, and you read the Republican Party press releases, and you're the conservative talk show host for your little community or your town or your city. And I knew I didn't want to do that. That didn't interest me. And so I wanted to take some of the elements of the Buchanan platform of immigration, foreign policy, but I knew we needed to make it a little bit more stout-hearted than that. And that was when I had the idea to, if we're going to do this, we're going to interview people who have a great deal of important things to say, but whose message would be hushed up or distorted by the establishment press. And we had this opportunity going on. One thing that still makes my work unique, even though there are people like you and Jason out there who I always tell Jason, far more talented than I've ever been and far more capable and are doing work now that I think even supersedes my best contributions. But we were able to get on AM talk radio, terrestrial AM FM talk radio. And that's what I think was the thing that made our show stand out. And from day one, we were interviewing people like Jared Taylor and Kevin McDonald and Sam Dixon. And I hate, you know, going through a list because we've interviewed hundreds of guests and they're all stand on equal footing. And so I don't want to start naming people because you're always going to leave out people that should be mentioned. But it was guests like that. And so from very early on, we were attacked. And I can remember it was just a couple of months into our run where the NBC, ABC, CBS were coming down on me for doing this. And there was a little bit of a national news at the time for being listed on the hate watch list. Of course, all my friends are on there. I mean, you're not at the party unless you're on there. And I said that. I think this is the time when so many, again, at this point in my life, I'm 24 years old, 25 years old, still relatively young, but certainly, you know, a man by then. But you see so many people much older than that just instantly do the white whip shuffle. They start cucking. They start, if you present them with their own beliefs, they run from it like a scalded dog. And I look square into the camera like I'm doing right now, national news. They said, what's your reaction to being on the hate watch list? That's a time when people would normally say, well, you don't understand, or I apologize. And I said, I'm right where I want to be. You haven't arrived as a leader unless you're on that list. I'm ecstatic to be there. And the show goes on. And so we're still there 17 years later. And yes, we've been attacked by every major media outlet and obviously most of them several times over. And we've had a lot of setbacks, a lot of the censorship and deplatforming that you and Jason are talking about. I mean, we've all been there and we all share those scars. But interestingly enough, I did actually have a very short-lived time as a CNN contributor, if you can believe it, where they would regularly have me on. It just goes to show to talk about racial issues, because we had that mainstream credibility with being an AM talk radio show, as opposed to something that was maybe just online only, which is where, you know, ironically, the bulk of our audience is. But they would have me on to talk about racial issues. This was in the mid-2000s, different issues with a racial animus. And, of course, now that would never happen again. So just in the time, of course, Mark, since you and I and Jason have been involved, we've seen this evolution or we've certainly seen it get progressively worse. But yes, so here we are still 17 years later. And of course, we present a pro-white message as confidently and as encouragingly as we can. I mean, we try to focus on positives. And serve as the shepherd of our flock. And so I've been doing that for 17 years, talking about many of the very same issues, of course, you do so well here on this program. But I do remember, if you don't mind me saying, you and I are the same age. And it's just amazing to me. We have existed in this orbit together for nearly 20 years and with similar trajectories. But this is the first time we've actually had an official collaboration. So I'm sorry it took so long. And I certainly could have done something about that before now as well. It's just one of those anomalies. But it's great to be here with you today. I remember one of the first few months on the air, we were covering your trial and your acquittal. And I remember that iconic picture of you celebrating the acquittal. So you've been there a long time. We both got in it around the same time, about the same age. So it has been amazing, and I'm sure you can share my view on this, to see how many incredible people who are championing this message with such professional ability as we see it now. And I think most of that's come just over the course of the last really 5 years, maybe 5 to 10 on the outside. But back when we were all getting started, it was really just, I mean, you could name them on your fingers and toes. There weren't that many people doing it. You were, of course, one of them. And so, again, it's a real honor to be here today.
Well, thank you. And one of the reasons we were asked, well, put in touch with you to have you on the show this month is because it's a Confederate History Month this month, which is obviously something that's very dear to your heart. Now, there are some news items I'd like to talk about today, but obviously, if you'd like to say something about Confederate History Month, I'd very much like you to.
Well, thank you for that opportunity. Yes, that actually isn't something we just made up. I know Jesse Lee Peterson, who is someone we've worked with, has created a White History Month that he celebrates. But Confederate History Month actually used to be a state-recognized holiday throughout the former southern states that made up the Confederate States of America. And that was just something that was always done in April. And it was done in April because the war between the states, of course, began in April of 1861 with the firing on Fort Sumter. And tragically, from our point of view, it ended in April of 1865 with General Lee's surrender at Appomattox. So from April to April, 1861 to 1865, and also Confederate Memorial Day has traditionally been honored in April in a lot of the southern states. Of course, the southern states themselves don't really do it anymore. It may still be on the books in some of these states, but there's no official proclamations anymore or time off or some of that stuff like there used to be. But of course, I'm very proud of my patrimony. I am proud of my ancestors. Anyone who won't stand and defend his family's name isn't a man at all. And I consider it a great privilege to have the blood of fighting men flowing through my veins. I want to honor their legacy. And of course, it's hard to do that. Our very best efforts, taking the spears and the arrows of a criminally corrupt media and the governments of our respective nations, isn't the same as sacrificing blood and bone like our ancestors have done and like my ancestors did and Jason's ancestors here in the American South. But it is really, I think they were the last group of people, the Confederates were the last group of people who fought to stave off this federal and globalist Leviathan on this continent. I think they were the very best men to ever trod this soil on the North American continent. And of course, they are an extension of our European forebears. So many people who settled the American South come from your area, of course, Mark, the windswept isles of Great Britain and the Scots and the Irish. And that's where our people came from. They settled this part of the world and they carried with them so many of those traditions, even their fighting tactics, even though the weaponry had changed, they still used sort of that Highland broadsword charge. And I've talked to Dr. Michael Hill about that a lot. And we had him on recently as we celebrate this special series this month. But and of course, they produced heroes worth emulating. I think Robert E. Lee was probably, in many, many ways, the greatest American who ever lived. But then a fellow Tennessean, I think, may very well have been the best warrior who ever lived, and that's General Nathan Bedford Forrest, who basically was perhaps the greatest tactician in military history with regard to mobile warfare. And I think, there's, of course, long been rumors that what he was able to do with cavalry the Germans tried to mimic with their blitzkrieg, obviously years later. But the Confederates were always outmanned, always outsupplied, but never outfought. So that's something that obviously we can put into our hearts and try our best to make sure that we do the same. But one more thing about Forrest, just to give you one example of the kind of heroes we celebrate in the South, or that good the good Southerners do, men who aren't going to betray their mothers and fathers and grandparents. Nathan Bedford Forrest is, to me, one of the most interesting men, not just of the Confederacy, but really of all time. He was born into a family of, I believe, 13 siblings, born into abject poverty. Couldn't read, couldn't write. But in spite of having no education at that time, no formal education, he grew to become a self-made millionaire in terms of being a planter. And yes, indeed, a slave trader later. And even though he was exempt from serving at all in the Confederate Army because of his status as a major planter, he first donated the majority of his wealth, nearly all of it, to outfit Confederate troops. So imagine now a titan of industry, maybe a Fred Smith with Federal Express or the family who owns Walmart, or you pick your major Fortune 500 baron, donating everything to a cause. Now, that would never happen. He did it. And then in spite of being exempt from service in the Army, he enlisted as a soldier of the lowest rank, a private. And then with no military training, he didn't go to the Virginia Military Institute. He didn't go to West Point. He was never trained as a soldier. And even though he enlisted as a private with no training, he grew up the ranks, rose up the ranks to become a lieutenant general. And again, his tactics are still studied today. Some of his victories in battle rival that of mythological gods. And he was able to personally kill 30 enemy combatants. He had 29 horses shot out from under him. And again, always at a disadvantage in terms of troops and supplies. So yes, there are things there that we can look at, that we can revere. Hard to necessarily go out and practice that in our daily lives. I don't know how we go out and do the things that he did, because our calling and our timing and our circumstances, they're not calling up armies right now that we can join, but we fight in the ways that we can, and we remember our ancestors, we honor our past, and we're never ashamed of it. And that's long been our motto, no retreat, no surrender, no apology. So yes, thanks for giving me a moment there to just say a few words about the South. So many great heroes, so many great stories. I could talk about that for the full 2 hours, but I'm sure contemporary topics must intrude. It's important to remember those things, but our battle still rages and needs our attention as well.
Well, I know people are sick of hearing about this, but I think we have to speak a little bit tonight about COVID and about the fact that we are seeing a vast, vast number of major medical complications from this so-called vaccine, which isn't a vaccine at all. We've been through that before on this show, this experimental gene therapy that they want us all to inject into ourselves, that essentially causes your cells to produce some kind of protein, then have an autoimmune reaction to that protein. Well, we've seen some really, really harrowing cases in the news. We've seen a number of people who've had their skin fall off. We've seen several people have these giant blisters emerge on their legs, which have led to them being wheelchair bound. There was one person in the paper about a week ago, or maybe earlier this week. I've lost track of when that particular article was, but she was told she might need her legs amputating. You've had numerous healthy people collapse with blood clots on the brain or aneurysms just dying. You've had people losing their hair. You've had people going into anaphylactic shock. You've had numerous autoimmune responses. Now in the UK, there's an absolute wave. About 1,500 people have come forward who have got tinnitus from this. Now, if you don't know what tinnitus is when you hear a tapping or constant ringing in your ears. So it's a noise in your ears. It's generally associated with people who have done manual labor all their life or worked in a factory. Maybe, you know, manned a drill, and all they've heard is that drill whirring for 8 hours a day, every day, for their entire working life. And now they've finished work, they can still hear that sound because they weren't given proper ear protection. But people who have taken the COVID jab, they have had this develop. And it's quite interesting. I was reading the comments on the Daily Mail page where they actually were talking about this. And there's people in the comments saying, oh, look, I've had the same thing. I didn't know what it was. I didn't want to go and bother anyone at the doctors. I didn't want to go to the hospital. I thought it was just a coincidence. But I've had this ringing in my ears develop ever since I've taken it. So all these horrible things are happening. And on top of that, you've seen a actual rise in deaths in India. Now, at the moment in India, they're telling us that COVID's in this third wave, that it's killing record numbers of people. But I actually posted a graph up on my Telegram just a few days ago. And this graph shows that there's only been this spike after the vaccination schedules rolled out. And it's almost directly in line with, there's a definite correlation there. You look at the figures and you're thinking, well, the more people they vaccinate, the higher the death toll's climbing. So is the vaccine killing all of these people in India? Potentially that is the cause of it, because India had basically seemed like they developed herd immunity. They seemed to have just rode it out. They'd had a bit of a spike. The spike had come down naturally. Then all of a sudden they start the vaccination schedule. And what do you see? You see thousands and thousands of reported deaths. You're seeing all these horror stories coming out of there. And it all lines up. Now, I'm obviously very, very worried about this, because whilst we're hearing all of this, whilst we're hearing all these horror stories, what else are you hearing? Well, you're hearing that doctors in Britain are now saying pregnant women should take it. You're hearing that they're trialing it now on 12-year-old children. Well, I'm not sure how a 12-year-old child can actually consent themselves to being experimented on. Are parents giving up their children to be experimented on? Who knows? And I think this is all quite worrying, because whilst all these problems are manifesting, and there's going to be far, far more, things are only going to get worse. Things are only going to get worse. And what you've got to remember is, during this so-called pandemic, the A&E departments were empty. Now A&E departments are full of people having side effects from this experimental gene therapy. But at the same time as all of this horror is unfurling, the media are running headlines like this: the vaccine holdouts, who they are and what's fueling their opposition. And the media are absolutely pushing for everyone to take it. But compare that to this headline: fit and healthy engineer 27 died 3 weeks after having first AstraZeneca anti-COVID jab and 11 days after he went to A&E complaining of headaches. So you're actually seeing masses of people dying. Here's the other headline: the patients who blame their tinnitus on COVID jab, at least 1,500 people complain they developed ringing in the ears after their vaccine. There's far more to this than meets the eye. Here's another. This is from the Times of India. This was published on the 9th of April this year. 75% of adverse deaths in India within 3 days of jab, says study. So in the Times of India, they're saying that 75% of people dying in this third wave are dying within days of taking the jab. There's this massive correlation. But people are still pushing for it. They're still pushing for the vaccine passports. The media is still telling us we must get this. And I know some people don't like me talking about this. I know people are saying, well, we've talked about COVID, we've done this to death. But I think this is such an important issue. And I think we really have to be going out there. People often also email me and say, how can I do something? Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your neighbors, don't get this jab. Convince people not to take it. This is a really, really serious, serious issue. And I've got to say this. I've got a real, real concern here that what we're going to end up seeing here in the UK is lots and lots of very, very compliant indigenous people being more or less bullied or coerced by the government, the media, their employees, their friends into taking this. And at best case scenario, these people are going to have negative reactions. At worst case scenario, they're either going to end up infertile or they're going to end up with life-changing injuries or actually dead. And I've got to say this. The UK government, what good does it do for the people? The UK government hasn't done anything good for the people recently, has it? Everything they do is a negative, whether it's hate speech laws, whether it's letting migrants in, whether it's pushing white privilege on school children. Why would they be pushing this for us if it was good for us? They wouldn't. If this was actually going to help us, if this was going to strengthen us, if this was going to turn us into super tough people of European descent that could weather any storm, they wouldn't want us to have it. You know, they'd be saying, don't you take that. We're not having you taking this. And I've got to say this. We've really got to push back against this. Some people in the chat, somebody's added, Mark in Chile, they vaccinate a lot of people and they're still saying COVID is spreading. I've got to say this. And people say, I fear the long-term effects are going to be much worse. People I talk to about not getting the jab think I'm mad. I get emails from people saying, how do I explain to my parents? How do I explain to my girlfriend? How do I tell my family not to get this? Well, you have to keep pushing this, because I really do genuinely fear that something terrible is happening here. And I know our big concern is immigration. I know our big concern is replacement. But the fact is, if our people become infertile, if our people are reduced to being bedridden or have major, major negative reactions to this, or worse still, die, we're going to be replaced at an even quicker rate. I don't know what you think about this, James. I don't know if you've rushed off to get the vaccine or anything. I hope not. I don't want to lose a man of your caliber. But what do you guys think? Is this happening in the States as well? Have you seen any of the data coming out of India?
Yeah, well, of course, we've heard about this alleged spike in COVID-related deaths, this new wave of COVID-related deaths in India. I've seen the same headlines you have, Mark. With regards to the wider topic, I mean, of course, going back the last solid year now, it's been a regular point of discussion on my program. I mean, how could you avoid it? It is the story of the last year. And I have so many different talking points sort of rattling around in my head. I don't know how best to logically order them, but I'll do the best I can. First of all, you nailed it a second ago, and that was my initial take last spring when we began hearing about this around the clock. If the entire establishment media is speaking with a single voice, which of course it always does, and it's working in cooperation with the various governments who do not have our best interests at heart, and they're in agreement on this thing, I am immediately skeptical and immediately inclined to do the exact opposite of what they're advocating for. I think that is the most healthy and logical response that a right-thinking person can do. If the media and the government is telling you to do something, that this is good for you, it's illogical to say, well, we know all the other things they push are transgenderism, homosexuality, I mean, you know, mixed communities. We know all of these things are bad for us, but they're lying about all of that, but they're going to tell us the truth about this? No. So that was my first reaction was hard skepticism. And as it's continued to be trotted out over the course of the last year, several months, I've only become more hardened in that opinion. And of course, last year, it didn't matter if somebody had one foot in the grave and another on a banana peel. If they died for any reason, it didn't matter if they were obese, had comorbidities. If someone with stage 4 cancer died, it got attributed to COVID. Everybody who died last year died of COVID. There were zero deaths from the flu. I mean, this is a slightly, I'm engaging in a little slight hyperbole here, but not much.
But no, it's not. And I've just got to jump in there and say this. We even had headlines like this in the UK where it was completely healthy 22-year-old girl dies of COVID. Why? You must be concerned. And you're thinking, completely healthy. And your finger's going on the mouse wheel and you're scrolling down and say, where's the punchline? And at the bottom of the article, there's a picture of her. She weighed about 26 stone. She was 22, but she weighed 26 stone. And you're thinking to yourself, you know, this is ridiculous. They were doing anything they could to sell it. And when somebody who's 26 stone drops dead, your number one thought isn't, well, that's a completely healthy person dying of completely, you know, natural causes. You're thinking, well, her ticker didn't have much longer left on the clock, did it? I mean, if you're 26 stone at 22, it's not really COVID, is it?
We've seen that time and time again. And of course, the exact opposite is true for these very mysterious fatalities where you have otherwise legitimately healthy people who take the vaccine and you know, they're gone a day or a week or whatever later, or they're having other serious setbacks. Now, yes, I think we all know people who have taken the vaccine who, by all accounts thus far, are fine. We'll see the long-term effects of that. I have not, not only have I not worn a vaccine, taken the vaccine, nobody in my family has, my wife, God bless her, my wife, who was carrying a child last year, our third child, she was pregnant all during COVID. She never once, and still to this day, has not worn a mask, nor has she put a mask on any of our children. So you got a big problem here. And the ultimate thing is, we have seen people who have supposedly been infected with COVID-19, and it's not a big deal. I firmly believe that if it does in fact exist as another upper respiratory illness or as a separate sort of illness that wasn't there before last year, and who knows for sure, but let's just at least, well, for argument's sake, give them that. I believe my entire family had it last year, and it ranged from being completely asymptomatic. We never went and got tested or anything like that. I'm not going to do that either. But I did have a peculiarity where there was about a two-week stretch where I lost, completely lost my senses of taste and smell. But that was it. And then they came back, and everybody's fine. Everybody was fine. If, in fact, we did have it, it wasn't a big deal. But we certainly know people who have tested. Now, that's a whole other conversational thread. The false positives and so on and so forth, the irregularities and the untrustworthiness of the test. But we know people who have tested positive and they had very mild symptoms and they were better. Maybe it has killed some people. I'm not going to entirely rule that out. But for the most part, by all objective measurements, it is not that serious of an illness. It is not the Black Death. It is not something where if you get it, you're gone. It is something that we know healthy people and even elderly people, for the most part, they're recovering at a 90 plus, and if you're healthy and younger, 98-99% clip. You have a full recovery and it's no big deal. No bigger deal than the flu or any other thing that you would rather not have, but it's certainly not going to kill you unless you're in this very, very, very single digit number of unfortunate cases. But to me, I think the biggest takeaway from it all is the fact that our people could be so cowed by it. And I don't know if when you see people wearing these masks and seeing people wear masks when they're the only driver in a car. I was going out driving today before the show and saw yet again a single person in their car with a mask on with the windows up. I mean, what is that about? If you want to get to the bottom of that, there's a great book out there that was published in 1841 by a Scottish journalist named Charles Mackay. And it's really one of the first studies of crowd psychology. It's called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And you can see how through media peer pressure and societal peer pressure, people will really claim to believe just about anything. And it's very sad. It makes you, it certainly makes you lose faith to a certain extent in your fellow man, which is why it's all the more important that people like us who are champions of truth and reason and logic should be the ones that have access to the microphones and to the pulpits, because we're going to lead people, our people especially, in the right direction. But this whole thing with COVID has beaten anything I've ever seen in my life. I hope. We never live to see anything this ridiculous again. But there is, Mark, a very big difference in the way people treat this and look at it based upon where they live. There's a difference between how rural communities deal with it, which is basically like my family has, completely lax and nonchalant, knowing that if you get it, you're going to be fine. And we're not going to play in this charade. And of course, people in urban communities, of course, rural and urban themselves are sometimes euphemisms for conservative versus liberal. Now, I don't want to get into what conservatives are now, but just to give you a definition that people will be somewhat familiar with, conservatives or people who are somewhat traditionalist, whatever, people who are nominally on our side, look at this far different than liberals do. Liberals are obedient to state power. Conservatives will challenge it and at least try to think for themselves. And there's a total different look in the United States. It's probably a great deal different than what you're facing in the UK. I have a lot of friends that live in the UK, so I know how terrible the lockdowns have been and how completely disproportionate they've been and how heavy-handed they've been. And in a state like the state where I live in Tennessee, and I live in a rural county in Tennessee, so I'm in a for lack of a better term here, a conservative state, and then I'm in a rural county in that conservative state. And the people around here, they go in. Now, the stores still have you need to wear a mask when you come in, but it is not mandated by our county government. And now, in fact, the entire state governor, the governor of Tennessee, my state, just this week said COVID is no threat in Tennessee, no more masks. But the local communities can still do that. And they do it in liberal strongholds. But out here, even though the stores still have signs up, nobody's wearing masks, or I say nobody, a great deal of people. There are always going to be people. I think that you'll see people perhaps even for the rest of our lives now wearing it because they're just so weak mentally. But you're seeing more and more, I should say, more and more people, even when you go into Walmart, even when you go into the grocery store, that are just not wearing them anymore. You would not see that in a liberal area. So there is a little difference there. But, of course, the UK is such a small area. I don't know how in the outlying counties of even the UK, if it's a little different. Now, I'd imagine it's probably more stringent up and down the island. There's a lot more variance here in the U.S. because, of course, it's such a big place with so many different states and so many different areas and different people. But down here in the South, it hasn't been, other than the inconveniences of things being closed and the initial shock where people said, well, we'll just see, I guess, we'll wear it for a little while. It hasn't been that much. I miss concerts. I miss live music. I miss, you know, being able and the silliness of social distancing and these corporations who feel compelled to continue that. But, you know, as far as it could have been a lot worse, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Here in the South, we've weathered it with as much disregard as anyone could.
Well, Jason, what are your thoughts on this? And just for the audience, if you couldn't see it on screen, what I put up, Daily Mail Online, as few as 2% of positive results from lateral flow results are accurate. Matt Hancock advisor says in leaked emails after Boris Johnson called on Nation to take them twice a week. So basically what they're saying is only 2% of the positive tests for COVID are actually accurate. So if you test positive, you know, there's only a 2% chance that you've actually got it. It's because that's how inaccurate they are. I mean, what's the point in taking the test with a 2% accuracy? I mean, to put that the other way around, these tests are 98% inaccurate. If you were to say to somebody, you need to take this test and it'll tell you whether you've got the disease, but it's 98% inaccurate, you'd say, well, it's absolutely pointless. It's just, what's the point in that? Well, exactly.
Well, I was just going to say, before Jason chimes in, or Mark, you can take this, either you or Jason. The one thing I haven't quite put my finger on yet is why. Is this all a beta test to see how docile our populations are in this day and age, how willingly they'll go along with any whims of the media? And of course, the entire medical community has been entirely discredited anyway. You had all of these different medical professionals, high-ranking medical officials, coming on last summer and saying that you couldn't have a birthday party, you couldn't have a Thanksgiving, you couldn't even eat with your family because this thing was so deadly in spite of everything we see and hear and know. But you could go to a Black Lives Matter rally and burn down a city, but it couldn't. They actually said it could not spread there, that it was unlikely to spread there. But the question is, why? Was it to get this vaccine produced to they could inject us with God knows what? Or was it just to see how docile our people have become? I don't know exactly why they pushed it the way they have.
I'll give you my thoughts and then Jason can wrap up on all of his thoughts and everything we've said. I think there's several things going on here. I think firstly, it's a test. I think they're rolling this out to see how far they can push things. I think often when anything like this occurs, they're asking themselves to basically see if they can split people into two groups. There are going to be people, or really into three groups. There's going to be people who will accept anything they say. There's going to be their adherence to the system. And they're going to be people that agree with everything the government does on COVID. And those people will make up a certain percentage of society. Well, really, there's four groups, isn't there? There's the elite. So let's say the elite make up, you know, 1% of society. So you've got 99% left. Then the next group is the group that will always do everything that the elite says. Now, these are your blue check marks on Twitter. They're your dribbling liberals on Twitter. They're the people, if they took the vaccine and their brain melted out through from their ear, they'd be no less intelligent. And those people are the ones that will agree with everything that's pushed on. These are the people that, you know, they think putting on two masks makes them twice as intelligent. They think that, you know, they'd literally fight you in the street to take your shot of the vaccine. You'd just be happy to give it to them for free. These people make up a certain percentage of society, and they're the ones that the government smiles on the most. Then there are the people that don't really agree with it, but are too cowardly to do anything about it. So you've got the compliant, then you've got the willingly compliant, then you've got the non-willingly compliant. Yeah. And the government push this second group to see how much they can push upon them before they snap. Because the sort of non-willingly compliant, the people who just go along with it because they don't want to be an outsider, they don't want to rock the boat, but they don't really agree, those people have a breaking point. They're not like the first group that'll go along with everything. They have a breaking point. So they have to see how many of the people like that there are and what their breaking point is. Then thirdly, there's the most dangerous group as the government sees it. And they are people who do not comply, who are free thinkers, who don't want the lockdown, who don't want to give up their freedom. And they're the real problem for the government, because those people, if they're in a sizable enough number, they rock the boat. But also those people convince the second group that they shouldn't be compliant. They convince the second group that maybe peaceful compliance to something they know that's wrong is not honourable. It's actually a weakness. It's actually a failure in their character. And I think the government are looking at those three groups and they're saying, well, ideally, the government want everyone in group one, but they know there isn't. So they'll be saying, well, there might be 15, 20% of society who are in group one. Then there's going to be maybe 50%, 50, 60% in group two, maybe more, maybe sort of 70, 80%, let's say 70% in group two. And then you've got like a remaining 9% in group three who are just non-compliant, whatever. And they're looking at that and thinking, how far can we push it? So I think it's a test to see where people will stand. I think it's a test to see how far they can push it before people snap. I also think it was very important for them to see this in terms of the mask wearing, because the compliance is very visual there, so they can see who's going along with it. It's like being told to wear a badge that says I'm compliant. They can see who's compliant. You go out into the street, you go out to open air shopping centers, and you'll see people wearing the mask all the time, and the government will be saying, yep, he's okay, he's always wearing his mask. Then you'll see people going into the shop, putting on the mask, and then taking it off when they come outside. And the government like, well, maybe there's somebody that we have to bully into compliance. Then there's the people who are refusing to wear the mask anywhere, and they're going on the government watch list. I also think the government were trying to see just how willing people would be to snitch on their own neighbors. And I think that's another massive thing the government wanted. The government wants a massive surveillance state, but the easiest way to surveil people is to have basically a snitch on every street, a snitch in every house, somebody who is passing information on their friends and neighbors. And I think that's something they wanted to see how far they could go. And they were very happy with that. I can't remember the exact figures, but I remember when they brought in this snitching, there was a big article in the Daily Mail saying that the police were literally overwhelmed. The police didn't think they'd get anywhere near that number of calls. They also wanted to roll out this track and trace so they can legally follow you. They can legally say, well, Mark Collett went into this place to get his burger, and that was after he'd come out of the gym. Then he went to the post office, and we've tracked him everywhere he goes. We know what he's doing. We know his patterns. I think they want to build that up as well. And I think also they wanted to bring in this vaccine. And I think this vaccine is not good for us. I think this vaccine has got things in it that will do us much, much harm. I think it's a real threat to pregnant women. I think it's a threat to people who are of breeding age. But also, let's never forget this. Let's never forget this, because this is very, very important. And I'll talk very briefly about this. But there's a lot of money involved in this. There's huge, huge amounts of money involved in this. Now, let's just talk briefly about one thing, the Nightingale Hospitals. With the Nightingale Hospitals, firms were paid to set these up and to fully stock them with everything they needed. Beds, swabs, bedpans, wipes, bottles and dispensers of that alcohol gel, everything these places needed were provided by big companies. And then nobody went in them. Nobody went in them. Not a single bed was ever used. So what happens? Well, I actually know what happens there because I've worked in the corporate world. I had a very good job before I came back to nationalism full time. And I can tell you what happens. Often in the corporate world, companies are paid to produce and install a product. And then when the company that has had the product produced and installed tires of that product, that same the company they bought it off is often paid to come take it down, disassemble it, and ship it out. So the company gets two bites of the cherry. But there's actually a third bite, because if you built something and if you installed it, then if you were paid to come and disassemble it and take it away, you've got it. And you can either sell it for scrap, or you can refurb it and sell it again at a knockdown price. And that's how a lot of companies make money. A lot of companies make money by supplying something to an industry or a group of offices. And then once they've supplied it and installed it, they will then be paid to take it away when it's no longer useful, and at which point you can refurb it and sell it again. You see it in the computer world. Computer companies get paid vast sums of money to produce a number of computers for an office. And when those computers aren't up to scratch, they're paid to come and take them away. They refurb them, and then they'll sell them to somewhere like Africa or India or places which want cheap, older computers. Same happens with mobile phones. And what's happened here with these Nightingale Hospitals is these big companies have been paid to build them, to fully stock them, and to get them ready to be absolutely operational. Then these big companies have been paid again to go in, take everything out, and strip them. But nothing's been used. So everything that's been paid for once, everything that's been paid to be installed, everything that then has been paid to be taken away, will then all be sold again by these companies because it's brand new and it's shrink wrap and never been used. There has been millions, if not billions of pounds made for this, from this complete scam. Never, ever forget. They want to take away our rights. They want to test us. They want to see if we're compliant. They want to get everyone snitching on each other. They want to break down our community. They want to isolate us. They want us to be depressed. They want us to take things that are going to damage our fertility rate and potentially kill us and harm us. They hate us. But they also want to make lots and lots of money while they're doing it. And I think all of these things are factors. Sorry, that was a little bit of a long rant. But Jason, what's your thoughts on everything we said? Because obviously you've been a little quiet tonight. So take 10, 15 minutes and say everything you need to say on from your perspective on all of this.
All right. Well, thank you. Both have said quite a little bit about it. I will only add what I think could be valuable to what you both have already said. I think number one, I have to start off by saying this is a topic that requires adults to speak. And by that, I mean people in full-grown bodies. I guess some children, age-wise, are mature enough to handle the subject. But many adults are not able to handle this subject. They just don't have the maturity. They throw tantrums right away when somebody begins saying something about the issue that doesn't comport with what they want to believe. And it's a very queer thing, and I think we should examine that in ourselves. If you have found this in yourself, that you suddenly feel extraordinarily passionate about something for which you have very little information, but you are firmly convinced about an outcome already or a motive or what have you, then you should really examine that in yourself. And so I'll probably say some things that aggravate people on both sides or all of the sides that are present on the COVID issue. Number one, so it requires some nuance. Number one, COVID is real. It's not fake. It exists. It is a new virus, and it causes bizarre symptoms that haven't been seen before. Losing all of your sense of taste and smell that James had, that is something that is very unusual. COVID toe, all of these different clots that occur throughout the body. There are many symptoms related to COVID-19 that are strange. Those are real things. And when COVID was first being discussed, if you recall, the anti-whites, and I'm sure most people have already forgotten, but we can go back and prove them wrong if they want to say otherwise. The anti-whites did exactly as we predicted. Since it was coming from a non-white country, the anti-whites said, oh, there's no problem there. I'm sure James reported on this many times. There's no problem with the COVID-19. Go to Little China, go to the non-white festivals, don't you dare, because you are an evil white person if you don't go hang out with the kinds of people that you think might be infected from, you know, these communities about COVID-19. And then, just as we said, when COVID-19, when the anti-whites realized, wow, we can use COVID-19 to advance anti-white agenda. They did. They flopped overnight. And suddenly COVID-19 became this horribly deadly thing that was just going to wipe out whole nations. And they needed these big restrictions. Why is that? Well, primarily, anti-whites are motivated by hatred of Western kind and Western civilization. They do what is expedient. And so they had an opportunity to advance anti-whiteism and accomplish those objectives of victimizing Western kind, destroying Western civilization with this virus, whether it was what they were then claiming it to be or not. And since, of course, has demonstrated that it is not. It has demonstrated that it does indeed have a very high survivability rate, that some people do have serious issues with it. I know a person who had a very healthy, young, athletic woman who had issues with it. So it's just a bizarre, new, strange virus that causes strange symptoms. Some people have serious issues. 99 point whatever it is survivability if you are healthy. So nothing like the anti-whites have claimed it to be. So that first off is the first thing. COVID is real. The second thing that's tangential to that, that you all were wrapping up with in your thoughts, that I'll touch upon now before I speak very briefly to the virus. And this whole thing would be a very interesting psych study, I think, the way the humanity has responded to this. Because I don't know if you all remember, but initially, people who are anti-white, people who are sycophantic and obsequious toward the state, they initially said, with the anti-white, the television says it's fine. I have no issue with it whatsoever. The reports were coming out, if you remember at that time, about that we now believe to be fake reports of people just mass dying in the streets of China and bodies were everywhere. And they had these strange videos. That was the time when you should have exercised caution. That was the time when you should have said, all right, well, maybe I'll get some hand sanitizer right now. Maybe I'll get some extra masks. There seems to be something weird going on. It was not the time to start buying freezers and 50 pounds or 500 pounds of meat. That was a giant waste of money at all points. But that was the time to say, all right, maybe I'm going to practice a little bit of extra caution. I even went over to the UK. We had a marvelous conference over there in the UK. I wore a mask. I used hand sanitizer. I exercised some extra caution, waiting to see, well, what exactly is this going to end up being? So the issue there that you both wrapped up with was the what's the purpose of COVID-19? Is there a purpose? Well, I would say there is no purpose, because if there was a purpose, there's a word here that we need to keep in mind, and that is verisimilitude. Even if there was some group of anti-white corrupts somewhere, oligarchs, and they were saying, let's make a virus, and then we're going to release it on the population to test, to do X, Y. All of that could be true. But verisimilitude means that the thing you're saying, does it have the ring of truth for our average brothers and sisters out there? And for our, because those are the folks we're trying to bring over to Go Free. And to the average folks out there, the vast majority, it's not going to have the ring of truth. It's going to sound a little wacky. It's going to sound like maybe you've been reading too many theories a little too much, and maybe what you have to say is a bit questionable. So instead, even if that's true, talking with those people out there, friends, family, and strangers about COVID-19 being something that is real, that then the anti-whites are using to do all of these things, to then maybe it's real and now they're going to be expedient. Now they're going to use it for testing. Now they're going to use it for lockdowns. Now they're going to use it to see how much more Western civilization they can destroy, how much harder they can make it for Western kind to resist what's happening. That would all be a sound like a very sane argument to make to those around you. And that I would suggest is the route to go when talking about COVID-19, and is there a purpose, or are they making a purpose out of it instead of a purpose being in the inception prior to its existence. Now, the final thing is the vaccine. Now, the vaccines, now Mark is absolutely right. I say primarily when it comes to anything the anti-whites do, it's victimize Western kind, Western civilization. That's what motivates them, chief among all things. Secondly is economics. So they do look for places, individual anti-whites look for places where they can make a buck or $100 million or $1 billion or whatever it might be. And a vaccine companies, they can't be sued in the United States. I don't know how it is in the UK. It's probably similar around the Western world. But they can't be sued in the United States. And they have this mRNA vaccine. And I've had some discussions with individuals, I'll just say, that are virologists. They're unsure of whether or not mRNA vaccines are going to really harm the population, or whether it'll be innocuous and it'd be just a $1 billion thing and then be able to be used to victimize Western civilization by making us all into further thralls than we already are. Now, there is evidence, though, in these vaccines that there is a potential for them to get into the nucleus of the cells. There is a vector for the mRNA to enter the nucleus. And that is extremely dangerous. And the people that I have spoken with do not know, and there is no literature that they can find, and they're in these fields, at the heads of practices, that states that no, absolutely 100%, the mRNA vaccines that they're giving will not get into the nucleus of the cell. If it gets into the nucleus of the cell, it then gets reproduced for the rest of your life. And the more that it produces, and what is it producing? It's producing the protein of COVID-19. So everywhere the protein is then released in your body, the immune cells see it and attack. And the autoimmune that we're seeing in a lot of people, which is not the only problems that they're having, and I'll wrap it up with these final words. The autoimmune is when the protein gets attached to cells in your body, like your eyeballs, like your hair follicles, like your liver or kidneys. The immune system sees the protein stuck there, if only for the moment, attacks it. And when it does, it takes in a little bit of the cell of the liver or the kidney or the hair follicle or the eyeball. And then it identifies those things that you need as part of an invader. And that's what autoimmune disease is. And it begins attacking your own cells there for the rest of your life, which from both an anti-white and economic perspective is advantageous for anti-whites, because it turns the white population into sickly, or more sickly than they were before, individuals, and sick people can't resist. And it also puts them on medications for the rest of their life that they have to pay for to treat the autoimmune disease that they are now afflicted with. So I'm not getting any vaccine. In fact, I announce everywhere I go, when I speak with people for the first time, I say, how are you doing? And they say, oh, I'm good. And the very next thing I say is, I'm not getting the vaccine. Get the vaccine. I did that. I went to the pharmacy the other day and talk about the feckless obsequiousness of the population. There was a white male. I'm not going to say he was a man, and I'll end on this anecdote. And he was my size, height, and maybe a little bit heavier, but he was fatty. He didn't have muscle, but general body shape, my size. And he had this girly kind of a little voice. And he was saying to the woman at the register, he's like, but I just want to get, and there was this big sign, COVID vaccine, 19 vaccines here. And he said, I just want to make sure that I get the vaccine, is what this guy was saying to her. And she's okay. Just go stand over to the side. This was just the other day too. They just sent out a text message alerts in Virginia, by the way, get your vaccines now. You've got to get them now because people are beginning. This whole thing is beginning to fall apart. Maybe I'll just end on that note too, because that's beautiful. The reality of it. So the guy's saying, I want to get the vaccine. So she said, just go stand over there and you'll get it. Don't worry about it. Everybody's going to get it. So he stepped away. And so I said nice and loud for him and all of the people at the pharmacy to hear and everybody in line. I said, well, unlike your previous customer who wants that poison, I do not want the vaccine. I know that I'll survive COVID-19. I know that everyone here, the odds are, will survive COVID-19. But the odds are potentially that with an experimental vaccine, that something will go wrong for somebody here, either less or great or whatever it might be. So nobody looked at me after that. The woman at the register still served with me, but nobody looked at me after that. I had to get Claritin. Just by the way, somebody wondering, you know, why is Jason at the pharmacy? But that saying that, I'll just say this. What the anti-whites are doing, a lot of people are very scared about this, and this is the white pill, this is the positive thing. What they are trying to do with this victimization is too broad, and they have too little force behind it. You can imagine in physics, you know, when you narrow the point, it's like an arrow. The sharper the point, the less force you need for it to pierce the flesh. If it's the broader it is, the more force you would need. The anti-whites have decided it with this, or not decided, but it's just become this, the victimization is too broad. And so it's breaking down everywhere. It's harming too many people. And what I am seeing and will continue to predict is that it will continue to break down, fewer and fewer people will wear their masks, fewer and fewer people will abide by the restrictions, fewer and fewer businesses will require people to have the masks on even when they enter these restaurants. I mean, how easy would it be for a restaurant to just say, no, well, you don't have to have it on at the table. Don't even bother. We'll be the restaurant that you don't even have to wear it in. And so it's breaking down. And as much as the anti-whites would like to make this the totalitarian apocalypse on Western civilization that they would like it to be, I am already seeing massive cracks throughout the entire edifice. And with that positive note, I'll pass it back to my dear brothers.
Well, Mark, with your permission, just a quick rejoinder. Number one, the thing is, I mean, there's just so many, if you apply any sort of critical analysis to this, there's just holes shot clean through it in every direction. For instance, I was out of town visiting some supporters of the program, and they had this mask mandate in the outside plaza area. But once you came into a restaurant, they weren't socially distancing the people who were seated to eat, as you see a lot of restaurants do. It was packed in the restaurant, and nobody was wearing a mask because, as we know, COVID can't spread if you're eating. If you're eating, this is an amazing thing. If you're eating, it cannot spread. You can be packed into a restaurant, not 6 feet apart, not anything, and the world be spinning on its axis as normal. But when you exit, you have to wear the mask or it can spread. So there's so many inconsistencies. One thing we may have mentioned is this could, in fact, have been a conspiracy all along by the toilet paper manufacturers. That was, I think, the toilet paper phenomenon when this whole thing first hit. Was one of the things I remember. There was no toilet paper anywhere. I don't know if it was that way in the UK. I know we had Drew Fraser on in Australia. It was just here you couldn't find it for months. But I think, Mark, you and Jason both nailed it. I think we've given this a really good broad stroke treatment. I think it isn't just one thing. It's a collection of things, as you mentioned. They have perhaps using this as some sort of a test or a case study or observation of the population. Obviously, they've used this so-called disaster to bilk the treasury and print money and fund a lot of projects and to divide the people. I mean, you now have people who otherwise wouldn't be at odds. It's the mask wearers versus the non-mask wearers, or the COVID believers versus the COVID deniers. It's taken on sort of like a quasi religious zeal to it. And then, of course, you have the subsection of people that you quite rightly mentioned, Mark, and that some people, they know it's all not as serious and not certainly rising to the level of seriousness where you would have to take all of these prophylactic measures, but they'll still put on the mask because they either don't want to have a confrontation or they want to make other people feel comfortable. But my bottom line is, especially with the vaccine, I don't think I need it. I would rather have the virus, if I haven't had it already, have it again or have it for the first time, than take some experimental rushed out vaccine. But I don't take any vaccines. I don't take the flu shot. I'd rather have the flu than take a flu shot. I'm not against medicine. I'm thankful that our people have progressed to the point where we can have medicines, life-saving medicines. But this, to me, ain't it. And so it's going to be interesting to see what percentage of the populations, they say, after a few more weeks and months, have taken the vaccine, or if they'll even be honest with that. If they tell the truth on that, it might be the first time they ever did. But, you know, are they going to say 80 or 90% of America or the UK have been vaccinated? And what punishments will come for those of us who decide in our own best interest and for the interest of our own health that we're not going to take it? Are they going to? I don't know. There hasn't been real firm evidence yet that you're not going to be able to board a plane or go to a sporting event or go to a concert or do this or do that unless you have this so-called passport or proof. But I don't think it's entirely been shut down yet either. So it's still going to be interesting to see. I did hear a commercial on the radio the other day where there's going to be a concert in, again, a rural area, a concert in a smaller city. No mask required, no social distancing. So it's going to be live music the way you would have seen it 2 years ago. But it's still going to be interesting to see if they try to levy punishments if you don't get it and how many people they claim are getting it. I would like to see the percentage of the people, an honest reporting of that, if we can get it, of how many people do actually get this vaccine versus those who don't. Big difference in putting on a mask just to avoid conflict and actually injecting yourself with something like this. I would love to see those numbers.
Well, thank you. We're going to do some super chats now, or the super chats. If you haven't donated and wish to, the details are all in the different chats. Bailiff Basher, I can't see what he sent because he sent it before the show started. So sorry about that. But thank you for the donation. He said, "Hi, Mark, have you ever tried to call out David Medell? He is the one who stitched you up on Channel 4's Dispatches program in 2002. I do know who he is. I remember that name. He said, "I would like to see you tear him a new one in a fair referee debate live on air. Can it be arranged? Best wishes to yourself, Laura, regional organizer, and all the members and followers of PA." Well, thank you very much. No, I don't obviously speak to him anymore. I don't know what happened to him. I should imagine he's being sneaky somewhere doing similar things to other people. Gus in Lanzarote sent a super chat. Thank you very much, Gus. And he asked, "When is the gorgeous, brave trad wife, Bernadine Bluntly, going to guest again, Mark? She's doing great work on Instagram promoting traditional family values and attacking the LGBT agenda, feminism that seek to undermine them. Traditional family equals increased population." Well, thank you, Gus. I would very much like to speak to Bernadine again, but I've lost touch with her. I've lost touch with so many people because I'm not on Instagram and Facebook, so I've got no way of contacting her. Now, I do know last time she came on the show, she actually found it really difficult because she told me as she was coming on that she was actually pregnant but didn't want to announce her pregnancy. So on the show, she was looking a little bit sickly, drinking water, and she's like, "Oh, I'm sipping the water because I'm feeling really ill," because she had some pregnancy sickness. I believe she's had the child now. Obviously, massive congratulations to her. We wish her and her family the best. But unfortunately, I am not still in touch with her. If she's watching the show, if anyone who knows her is watching the show, if anyone can put me in touch with her, if anyone wants to give her my number or if she's on Telegram, it'd be great to speak to her again. So, yeah. She is definitely welcome on the show. She does some great work. But also, I'm not sure what her schedule's like because she obviously runs a business, and I think she likes doing the Instagram because it's relatively easy. She just puts up posts as and when she can, whereas doing a two-hour interview is something that's pretty hard when you've got a six-month-old baby. And I certainly don't want to put undue pressure on the woman, but would love to be in touch with her. Serena JB gave £5. Hello, Serena. Lovely to see you tonight, and thank you for the super chat. She says, do you think that the anti-white signaling in the Oscars is causing the drop in viewing figures? Do you think this anti-whiteness will continue in spite of the loss of viewers, or will they continue with their toxic messaging? I think yes and yes is the simple answer. I think people are sick of these things. I think people don't... It's like The Simpsons. I'll give you an answer to do with The Simpsons. I used to love The Simpsons. I used to tune in all the time. I can't stomach watching that preachy BS anymore. I think the time when the last episode of The Simpsons I actually watched was the one with Lady Gaga as the guest star, where she arrives in Springfield in some customized, ridiculous, like tranny train or something, and she has to come to help. And it was just, it was so cringe. It was just awful. It wasn't good to watch. And I think The Simpsons has disrespected the fans. It's ruined the actual show. And they've also damaged a lot of the characters. I remember seeing the episode of The Simpsons where they changed the backstory for Principal Skinner. So instead of being a Vietnam veteran, he was just some weird dropout who wasn't the real Principal Skinner. And I think, you know, I'm talking about The Simpsons when you asked about the Oscars, but they do this with everything. Everything is the same. Everything that you love or everything that our people love will be destroyed. So the Oscars, The Simpsons, whatever it is, comic books, computer games, they'll all have this anti-whiteness pushed into it. And they'll all experience decreasing viewing figures, decreasing sales. But it won't bother them. They'll carry on regardless. And the Oscars is the lowest watched Oscars ever. No one wants it. No one was interested. No one cared. But do I think that will deter them? Absolutely not. These people fund comedies with Lily Singh as the host. She's just not funny. She's never done a funny monologue in her life. I'm funnier than Lily Singh. She's useless. No one laughs at her unless they're laughing at cringe compilations of how she's not funny. But they still keep paying and they still keep giving her a show. I think these people are set on this path, and I think they're funded by such powerful and rich people that who cares if they lose money? Look at the film Suicide Squad. How many millions did that lose? Was it tens of millions, hundreds of millions did Suicide Squad lose? But they're making a new one called The Suicide Squad. You know, it doesn't matter how many times they fail. There's always a Soros to bail them out. What do you guys think? Will the Oscars bounce back? Or do you think they'll stop with the anti-white messaging? Or do you think they're just going to keep pressing on regardless?
They don't mind losing money, Mark. You're exactly right about that. They've got the money to lose, and it's more important to continue this browbeat of propaganda, this incessant drumbeat of anti-whiteism through all of their organs. And so they'll lose money as long as they can continue to be able to imprison our ability to think for ourselves through all of these different agencies. And it is a pathogen. I mean, it does ruin everything. I mean, obviously, yeah, comedians aren't funny anymore. These comedians, these late night comedians now, so-called comedians, it's nothing but anti-white liberal claptrap, and it's not funny. I mean, one of the things that used to be funny about comedies was the ability to do a little good-natured ribbing on different people and play into stereotypes, and that's of course what The Simpsons was most famous for. They did shit takes on everybody. It didn't matter. And then you see now, you know, one of the great talents of The Simpsons, Hank Azaria, apologizing for a poo. Well, was a poo not pretty close to form with what you see when you go into one of these convenience stores? And just all of that, it's terrible, because again, I remember when The Simpsons came on the scene, I was in about fifth or sixth grade. I mean, it was just a huge thing, and it was so unique. But yes, they've ruined entertainment. The Oscars, 9 million, lowest ever. And you would think that there would be more right now, because people still, especially, and again, some of these blue states or some of these areas where you still have pretty restrictive COVID policies and measures. What are you going to do except watch TV? Now, they'll say, well, there's so many different streaming platforms now. It's not just broadcast cable anymore. People have entertainment, a wider variety of things to watch. But the Oscars, like the Super Bowl, has traditionally been a pretty big deal in America. And so, yes, I mean, it would certainly be dishonest to say that this, as you call it, and I say it too, I don't want to watch the preachiness of the anti-white preachiness infect entertainment. There's nothing wrong with entertainment. Now, we don't want to be obviously to give ourselves to bread and circus, but there's nothing wrong with taking a momentary departure from time to time and enjoying a sporting event or enjoying a movie. I like sporting events. I like movies. I like music. But I don't like watching a movie that's nothing but the same message that I'd get from MSNBC, or watching the NBA or the NFL, which has just completely given themselves over to this Black Lives Matter terrorism and all of these other things, or watching the Grammys, where every song now is just something degenerate. If it's not anti-white, it's just completely and utterly degenerate in other ways. So, yeah, they've taken it all, and it's all infected with this pathogen. But they don't mind losing the money. I don't think it will change until we change things. They're not going to reform themselves. Whether or not the numbers bounce back would be interesting to see. But they could be down to zero viewers. But if we're not actively taking back our nations and the institutions of our nations, academia, the churches, the governments, the media, whatever, they could have zero viewers, and it still wouldn't help our standing.
You both have said it all. We can keep rolling, Mark.
Well, I've got an interesting super chat. I'm going to read this one out of sync. It's Red Line, and he gave $3. Thank you very much. He said, Hollywood might lose billions, but they will be funded by Wall Street with some of the COVID bailout money paid by the taxpayers. And that's a very good point. Every time these things fail, the taxpayer ends up bailing them out in some way. Glenn the Chinaman gave $5. Thank you very much, my friend. Good to see you here tonight. He said, have you seen the documentary Princes of the Yen? It is a great insight on why ultimately the enemy is unrestrained finance capitalists. They engineered Japan into a financial crisis in order to put pressure on the government to implement economic reforms. I haven't seen Princes of the Yen. Have either of you?
No, I haven't.
Okay. No. So sorry about that. Sorry, can't answer that more fully. Years the Unit gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, folk tithe for the great James Edwards. Thank you very much. Glenn the Chinaman gave $5. And it said, one of those reforms was allowing foreign workers, in other words, lowering the barriers to Zio capital, vastly increasing their influence in the country. Remember, the rich have no nation while the Zionist billionaires remain loyal to theirs. Thank you very much. Michael57DE gave $20 and said, hail Mark, hail Jason, hail James, hail the gods and hail our folk. Did you hear that the very tan imported from Brazil, BLM supporting cop who shot Ashley Babbitt in the Capitol, is getting extra protection from the system? The cameraman who shot the videos had his house raided and has been arrested and jailed. Well, that doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me at all. Absolutely, absolutely sickening. I mean, I've got to say, that cop was posed no threat whatsoever by Ashley Babbitt, yet he opened fire, he discharged his weapon. He's probably getting a payoff for doing that, whereas look what's happened to Derek Chauvin. It tells you everything you need to know. Yep. You know, basically, George Floyd was a complete scumbag. And the fact that now that even members of the clergy are sort of comparing him to Jesus Christ, I'd like to ask those clergy members, I'd like to say to them, look, can you please point me to the verses in the Bible where Jesus holds up a pregnant woman with a gun, pushes it into a pregnancy bump, demands money so he can buy drugs? Oh, no, Jesus never did that. George Floyd was a disgusting excuse for a human being, and the world is better off without people like him in it. Junta Mominari gave $5 and said, BAME BIPOC aren't one homogenous group that works together. It is only when it is directed from the top. Without the unifying aspect of money, power, and incitement toward whites, there wouldn't be unity to begin with. This is a fragile coalition. Now, I've got to really agree with Junta Mominari here. This is a really, really important point. You're seeing in America now a vast number of attacks by African Americans on people of Oriental origin. And this just shows people of color aren't one big amorphous group who all get on and want to live in some happy utopia. The cracks are already showing. So thank you for the super chat. Glenn the Chinaman sent another $10. Thank you very much. And he said, thank you, Mark, for refraining from racial slurs and going on hateful tirades. You're one of the few dissident Westerners that isn't afraid to speak the truth and doesn't see the whole world as their enemy. Sadly, I only see you and Eric Stryker that behave this way. Well, thank you, Glenn. I just want to point this out. The Commission for Countering Extremism in the UK obviously included us in their report, and we've gone through that now, and we've sent a response to the Commission, and we've written letters actually to Zara Khan and to Mark Rowley, and they're being forwarded on to them complaining about attacking us. And one of the points I raised in this is that Patriotic Alternative has a clear policy against advocating for violence, advocating for terrorism, or using racial slurs. And the reason we have that policy is because fundamentally, I don't see people as people from other racial groups as my enemies. I don't see these people as people that are naturally my opposition. The people I see as my opposition are the government. The people I see as my opposition are those in the media, those in the establishment who are doing this to us. I am absolutely happy for all people of the world to exist within their homelands and to prosper in those homelands and to take their destiny into their own hands. I do not believe for one moment that people living in Nigeria, people living in Saudi Arabia, people living in Japan or China are my enemies. I believe that they have the right to control their own destiny, and what they do in their country is up to them, just as what the Indigenous Brits do in their country should be up to Indigenous Brits. And I think it's very, very important that those who describe themselves as nationalists or national socialists or patriots understand that nationalism isn't a doctrine just for their little group. It's a doctrine for all people across the world. It's something that can be applied to every people, every culture, every ethnicity. And if applied, it can be done well, and we can all live harmoniously, trade with each other, learn from each other, visit each other for holidays, but we don't have to be pushed together into a multicultural melting pot. And I personally find those who insist on using racial slurs, either I see them as either very, very unintelligent and motivated by the wrong things. I see them as people who are potentially federal agents or those who are trying to do us down. Or I see them as people who ultimately don't understand in the slightest what we stand for. And they don't understand that proud Western people have a tradition of morality, of speaking correctly, of being polite. That's part of Western tradition. And if you can't string a sentence together without swearing at somebody or without using a racial slur, then I'm sorry, but you're not really embodying our culture, our traditions. You're not embodying our way of life or Western morality. We were a polite, moral, decent group of people who upheld honor and chivalry. We're not people who need to use foul language and racial slurs. It undermines everything we do. And if that offends some people, if some people are going to rage and say, well, they've got the right to call people what they want, well, you go and do that. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, you shouldn't really be calling yourself a patriot, a nationalist, or a national socialist. You should be you should basically just call yourself a Hollywood Nazi and carry on with your LARP. I don't know if you've got anything to add to that, guys?
Well, no, that's one of the things, again, having gotten a start with someone like Buchanan, who was more, you know, I think he's been a gateway to a lot of for a lot of people into our wider, more direct movement. But when I first got on the air, I wanted to at least take some of those mannerisms in terms of you know, very seriousness, very serious, very strong, but also polite. And you can be a strong warrior while maintaining a sense of chivalry and maintaining a presence that doesn't put you down into the sewer. And I think it is important that we put our best foot forward. I think presentation and packaging is in some ways at least complementary to our message, if not in some ways supersedes it. So I think you need to put forth a message that's going to attract a high caliber of people. And so that can involve your dress, obviously, the way you dress, the way you speak, and other trappings as well. But yeah, I think it's important not to to use crude language and present ourselves and our wider message and our wider community in a way that will bring dignity and honor to our cause.
Thank you, Jason. I think you agree with us, but if you'd like to add anything to that, feel free.
Nope, I absolutely agree.
Okay, well, I've got a question here for James. It's from Redline. He gave $5. Thank you very much. And simply asked, James, what do you think of Nick Fuentes and America First?
You know, obviously, we would probably agree and have a lot of overlapping beliefs with a lot of the things that he says. He is, I guess, the new kid on the block and is sort of getting the treatment. And in some ways, I mean, it has gotten worse. I know when you first came on the scene, Mark, as well as me, there's a big crush of media attention, and they do try to break you. And if you weather that, it never goes away. There's still going to be constant attacks, but it's not as intense over the course of 17 years as it is when they first find out about it. And I think he's gotten that over the course of the last year. I thought it was at least noteworthy. We have conferences. Jason has spoken at my conference before, and we attract a very high caliber number of people. I do it a little bit differently than he did, in so much as when we have our conferences, we just invite patrons, supporters of our work. It's a private, very private thing. We never release the details before, during, or after the fact. So I think they did that somewhat similarly in Orlando with Fuentes' group a few weeks ago. And it after the fact, they released it, or rather they had a live stream of it. And so they wanted media attention. But I thought it was noteworthy that he had a sitting member of Congress come. We could interview people like that, too, but I'd rather interview people that have something thoughtful to say. But he actually was able to find a sitting member of Congress who wouldn't just read off a Republican sanctioned message. And so we need certainly to be able to blaze trails into the establishment. And interacting with people like that, you know, could perhaps give you the opportunity to do something more later. I can't, though, relate. The message certainly overlaps. I'm not in disagreement with hardly anything that I've heard him say. I don't know him as well as I know so many leaders in this movement, particularly our generation and older. I have an old heart. So most of my friends are 10 or 20 years older than me, or most of the people that I work most closely with in this cause, I should say. It's hard for me at this stage in my life, 40-year-old, married, father of three, to imagine myself going down and shouting CPAC is gay into the cameras. I know you have youthful exuberance and you do things like that at that age. So there's different tactics, different methods. Again, it's hard to relate being in different seasons of life to someone who's at a very different stage of life. And how they present the message. But he's obviously shown a great deal of ability in getting younger people to come to a message that perhaps we, as being someone they can't relate to in terms of circumstances and age and life experience. Listen, let a thousand, what's the old saying? Let a thousand roses bloom. I wish him nothing but the best. But it is an interesting thing because he seems to be the talk of the establishment right now when they're trying to put a face. They always want to have a face they can most readily associate, and he has become one of those faces. So I would actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask, this is something that's really never come up even on my program. We just haven't talked about him a lot. We talked a little bit about AFPAC, but only once. And what do you think the general's opinion of him and his work is with the elder guard of the cause? That's just something I'm personally interested to know. I've just kind of watched him from afar and I'm aware of some of the things. I know he's on the no-fly list. Obviously, that's, you know, an injustice, and I feel for him. He's going through a lot of the things we've gone through. But with regards to tactics and methods, what do y'all think?
I think that, and I'm going to have to be quick on this because we've still got quite a few super chats, but I actually think Nick Fuentes has done some really good things. I was slightly worried at one point that he was just going to remain a commentator and wasn't actually going to move into the real world. And I actually had a bit of a heated debate with somebody saying, look, he can't remain a commentator. He's doing massive damage to the establishment. And when you burn down somebody else's ship, when you set fire to someone else's ship, you have to have lifeboats ready for good people who want to join you and are going to jump off the ship that's on fire, and you have to take them to safety. And he's got that ship now. He's got those lifeboats. It's America First. I think what he's done is great. And I think he reaches out to a lot of young people. I think my only slight worry about him is I hope he is being steered by some older hands, by some people who are slightly more mature, because youthful exuberance can be a blessing, but it can also be a bit of a problem. And sometimes youthful exuberance can give way to foolishness, and youthful naivety combined with youthful exuberance can lead to disaster. And I really hope that he does make America First grow. I wish him all the best. Yeah. I obviously think he brings a lot of people to our cause. He's clearly an ethno-nationalist. He's clearly a Christian. He's clearly somebody who's fighting for America as it was intended to be, a place with a white supermajority that is a moral, Christian, Eurocentric nation. So the fact he's doing all that, he's an ethno-nationalist, he's doing a good thing, and, you know, good luck to him. Good luck to the lad. Anyone that's, and he always seems pretty polite as well. We talked about politeness and doing things the right way. He is quite polite. I always think he gives a good account of himself, and I think that's very important.
I echo everything you're saying.
Okay, well, look, I'm going to have to fly through some of these super chats. Glenn the Chinaman has asked the best super chat so far. He says, $3 US. Mark, I am working with people in Japan on hosting an event. Would you be able to speak at it? We can help raise money for airfare and a hotel. How can I contact you for more information? Glenn, that is the best question ever. Mark at thefallofwesternman.com. Mark at thefallofwesternman.com. If you fly me over there, make sure you put me up in the electronics district of Tokyo with all the old game shops, and I will be missing in action for a good 48 hours as I fill numerous trolleys with old Super Nintendo games. I've always wanted to visit Japan. If I did go there, I definitely want to visit the Nintendo HQ in Kyoto, and I definitely want to visit the games district in Tokyo. I would love to go to Japan. That is a big smile from me, so thank you. Flying Dutchman gave $25 US. Thank you very much. Very generous super chat. He said, gentlemen, would you please explain how the dissident right is peacefully fighting for the little guy? Well, I'll pass that over to James, because I think we've been, I think we explain that all the time. I think we always fight for the little guy. I think we push back. We constantly, in everything we do, fight for the little guy. Would you like to answer that, James?
Well, I guess I just thought that was the default understanding that, I mean, we're certainly not fighting for the elites. And I guess it's true that very few successful revolutions have ever been bottom up. We will need the help of elite or replace the elite with our own elite. But I don't know. Listen, I'm a populist, and I come from a working class family, a Southern family. We've never had a silver spoon in hand. And so, listen, I mean, our message is going to be good for everybody, regardless of your socioeconomic status. We fight for our extended community. But yeah, I mean, I've always considered my work to be for the common man, our brothers and sisters on the street, and our cousins and kinsmen across the Western world.
Thank you. And I'd say we support the little guy in many ways. We help empower people. I mean, I know that Patriotic Alternative in the UK, we mentor people, we help them with their CEVs. We spend hours bringing people together, helping them make friends. We've brought people together who are now couples. We've got people who are married. We're looking forward to our first Patriotic Alternative baby soon. We do everything to make the lives better of the little guy. So thank you very much for the super chat. I'm really going to have to speed through these, though, because we've only got 17 minutes left. For Camaraderie said, gave $5 US. Thank you much. Said, evening, Mark, Jason, and James. Recently found goyimtv.tv. One profound vid is from Shady Anderson. It's time to wake the F up. Maybe worth checking him out and inviting him on the show. Have Jason or James heard of him? Love to Laura and Sam. The battle continues. Have either of you heard of Shady Anderson?
No.
I have not.
Well, thank you very much. Sorry about that. Years the unit gave $3 US. Thank you very much. And said, my mother is 70 and got the 2-stage vaccine ending 6 weeks ago. She hasn't been the same since. She's high anxiety, forgetful and low energy. It's sad it took this to get her to believe me. Well, I'm really sorry that happened. And but thank you for the honesty and thank you for the super chat. Old Mother Earth gave $3 US. Thank you very much. And said, it is fairly common knowledge that those with blood group O are less likely to get COVID. 48% of the UK have this blood group. I didn't know that, but thank you. That is fantastic information. I did not know that. Auntie Hen gave £10. Thank you very much. She said, got here late. Just want to say hi to James Edwards, a true hero for the cause, along with Mark and Jason. Been listening to the cesspool since 2008. James has done so much good for our people. Indeed, he has. Max Anderson gave £3. Thank you very much. And he said, good show. I'll make sure I listen to the James show. What are your thoughts on the retired French generals calling for a military coup? Well, I think that's definitely taking it to the next level. Having French generals come forward and say that Macron either has to basically get rid of Islam or start doing something about Islam, or they need a military coup before France ends in a civil war. That's big news. What do you guys think to that?
You know, we just had a something that's a novelty for my audience. Back in March, we had a special, now annual series we call March Around the World, where we interview exclusively different leaders, different elected officials from the Western nations outside of the U.S., Canada, Australia, of course, across Europe. We ended it with Flip to Winter. But we didn't have anybody from France, and I'm not that aware of the situation that they're referring to, actually.
Okay. Well, we'll move on. David Peterson gave £10 and said, if you had to think of a wacky internet nickname for yourself, what would it be? We'll start. Well, I don't want to just throw it to James because it gives him the least time to think of it. Yeah. A wacky internet nickname. I'm not sure. What would the chat call us? Can the chat think up any wacky internet nicknames for myself, Jason, and James? Somebody's come up with Marky Mark. That's the first one. Yeah, that's not. You get some points for that, for being first, but I think we can do better.
I got to think about this, and it would be self-indulgence to call any of ourselves, the jackhammer or anything. Wow, that might be something we have to sleep on, because we want to get it right. I mean, you don't pick the name of your children, just willy-nilly. I mean, we gotta really think about this. We want it to be, something that really matches our personalities and our skill set. So that's a tough one to do on the fly.
Somebody's called me Mighty Mark. I quite like that. I'll take that. Somebody's come up with the Scene Kyle crew. Very good. James Edwards could be Jedward. That's a UK joke, because there's a couple of twins called Jedward who sing.
I've been called worse, I can tell you that.
Yeah, we'll have to think up some amusing names for ourselves. And one of the funny things is, I don't even have amusing names for me on when I play games. I just call myself Mark Collett, because people recognize my voice anyway. So if you want to find me on Steam or the Activision servers, I think I'm even just called Mark on the Nintendo network. So, if you want to find me, I didn't even come up with an amusing name for myself in the gaming world. So that's about as I'm pretty boring, really, in that respect. Michael57DE gave $3 US and said, thank you very much. She said, sticks to the video today. Nick is on the no fly list. Yes, indeed he is. He is. Now we have some unpaid super chats as well. We always do. And just as I said, I'm on Steam. By the way, Steam, if you don't know what it is, it's the biggest online game store for the PC market. And just as I said, I'm on Steam. I have now just started getting notifications of people that have just requested me on Steam. So people are clearly gaming as they're listening to this.
We like multitaskers.
Yeah, somebody's like, quick, Get him on my friends list. Yeah, I'm on Steam and I'm just playing Resident Evil 6. Obviously not as we speak. I mean, that would be a real feat, wouldn't it? Actually playing through a game whilst doing the stream and looking into the camera and super chatting, everything, that would be quite good. We've got another super chat here from Alex May. Thank you very much. Generous super chat, $25. And he said, Mark, where do you get your energy from? You're an inspiration to many. So I just got two more. So yeah, I think I'll bring up my Steam ID so you can know how to find me and you can all add me. My Steam ID is simply, Mark Collett, and it is the same picture I use everywhere. So if you want to find me, that's what it is. A few people are adding me. Alex May, thank you for the super chat. Where do I get my energy from? I don't know. I just try and stay as positive and I try to stay as inspiring for everyone. And I just feel that, like, you can't allow yourself to get down, can you? You've just got to take the positives you can from life. And I train well. I've been to the gym today. I had my double quarter pounder with cheese for my protein afterwards. I've spent some time with the family. I've worked hard. I've obviously riled the commission for countering extremism. I spend time with my family. But you've just got to be positive about everything. You know, you can never give up hope. You just never can. And it's just little things. It's this morning, my daughter was dancing around the living room because I was playing her the music from the old 8-bit version of Super Mario Brothers, the first one. But she can't say Mario properly, so she calls him Maro. So, and she asks to dance to Maro because she likes that. I always play her the music because it's dead simple and she dances along. And I prefer that to nursery rhymes because I've got no interest whatsoever in nursery rhymes, but she loves it. And it's little things like that that just give me energy. Obviously the Red Bull plug for the Red Bull. I do get through at least one can of that per day, but that's my only vice. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't use any form of banned narcotics. I just try to stay positive. And I think there is a lot to stay positive for. And, just to update you, I've just had three more people add me on Steam. So no doubt the Steam account will be banned by the end of the night. Frozen, no more Resident Evil collection for Mark. People say McDonald's is trash food. You're incorrect. I can tell you this. Don't eat fries. Never eat the fries. Never eat the chips. Never drink the full sugar drinks. But if you've been to the gym and you're lifting heavy, especially if you're using creatine, a double quarter pounder with cheese, that's something like 56 grams of protein. I don't think you can even process that much protein in one digestive cycle. But I can tell you this, I have a rigorous training regime of which involves sort of like regular protein. And I've got to say, that is a cheap protein boost. So, I've also got to say this, you know, people are saying it's trash. You know, I suppose if that's my one vice in life, eating the odd double quarter pounder, you know, you can, when we build the ethno state, you can all hold me to account for my crimes of McDonald's eating after the gym. Frozen Fire 147 said, Mark, I think we should take this more seriously. Oh, he's saying, I think we should take this more seriously and make public lists of anti-white and woke companies so we can collectively stop buying from these companies. I think that's a good idea. I think it's very important that we push back against this sort of wokeism or leftism or whatever you want to call it and make a list of companies that are easily avoidable. Obviously, it's harder to avoid things like supermarkets. I do call for boycotts of supermarkets sometimes, but I like to call for boycotts of companies it's easy to avoid. So, for example, if there's only one supermarket in your locality and people call for a boycott, really, you're not going to boycott them because it inconveniences you too much. But there are smaller things you can boycott. You can boycott certain films. You can boycott things like the Oscars. There are things that are easy boycotts, and we should be suggesting easy boycotts for our people, boycotts that aren't massive inconveniences and can really hurt smaller companies that have jumped on the woke agenda. An 88th Brigade asked, this will be the last question of the night. Let's do this quickly. But he says, what's my opinion, or what's our opinion on man-made climate change? I think the biggest threat to the world isn't climate change at all. I think that's a load of nonsense. I think the biggest threat to the world is overpopulation. The world is vastly overpopulated in human terms, and this is causing a huge amount of destruction to our natural environment. We are now in a period that is classified by scientists and ecologists as a period of great dying, where a record number of species are being wiped out. And I think when you look at the amount of plastic pollution in rivers, oceans, etc., the amount of landfills, this is all because we're overpopulated. The world wasn't meant to have this many human beings on it. It's as simple as that. There's far too many people here, and that's the real issue, I'm afraid. What's your take on it, James?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and that goes back into our, as Kevin McDonald puts it, our pathological altruism. A lot of that would have taken care of itself had it not been for Western medicine and our belief that the only time we can really do good is if we're doing good for the other. And of course, we don't want to see anybody suffer and die or anything like that, but there has to be population-environment balance. Dr. Virginia Abernathy, who's a good friend of mine out of Vanderbilt University, professor emeritus at Vanderbilt, has long been involved in that cause, population-environment balance. But that's important, not just in terms of overpopulation, which I think we're certainly racing towards, but it's important for us to have a balance in our own life, as you just mentioned, Mark. Get out to the gym, get out and spend time with your family, get out, go on dates, get out, do something. You can't eat, live, and breathe this cause, but you do need to certainly engage yourself in this cause in any way that you can. And not everybody, of course, listening can do other things that maybe we have done, but everybody can support the people who are doing the work. And I want to ask everybody to please support the work of Mark and Jason. Support PWR. It's certainly a broadcast entity at the tip of the spear. And, you know, I just noticed as this the thing has gone on now for nearly 2 hours, and it's been a fast 2 hours, I'll tell you that. But, you know, we all, the three of us certainly have a lot in common, same stage of life, all with a lot of energy, all happy warriors, and all, I think, with the belief that we are going to win. I don't believe that the greatest people to have ever left a mark on this earth, the most distinguished, the conquerors, the inventors. I don't think we're going to exit the stage of history the way that the current trends would indicate. I think we will turn it around. I do not know what the catalyst will be, or if we'll live to see it, or if it'll be hundreds of years from now. I don't know if we'll ever see the mountaintop, but I do want to see the valley. And no matter what, no matter how it plays out, I think it is important that we commit ourselves to doing our duty. You do your duty, and that goes back to something that we talked about at the very beginning of the show, as we're celebrating, at least I'm celebrating, the Confederate leaders. Robert E. Lee said it, do your duty in all things. You cannot do more. You should never wish to do less. No matter how it's going to play out, we will stand. We will stand strong, and we will face the uncertain world with our heads held high and our shoulders squared. And with a sense of togetherness. And it's really, 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 again, guys, been an honor to be with you all today.
Brilliant. Thank you. We've got one last super chat. Wonderfully named, but difficult to say, especially if you're saying it fast. Pleasant Pheasant Plucker gave £3. Thank you very much. He said, McDonald's, buy some red meat. Keep eating McDonald's and you won't be alive to see the ethno state. Do you think the left will push trannies in the armed forces so military coups will be impossible? Well, I'll answer the McDonald's question first. I think that I've just got to say this. Like, look, if you buy meat that's in supermarkets, if you buy ready meals, if you buy anything from a takeaway, if you eat from any fast food place, really wherever you get the food, it's not going to be great unless you grow it organically yourself. Look, I am trying to get into good shape again. I've been at the gym for a long time, and I know that if I eat a protein-heavy diet, if I run once or twice a week, if I'm doing regular body weight exercises on my off days and I'm in the gym three times a week, I am hoping to be back in shape for the PA hike, and nothing's going to stop me. And I have never, ever used any performance-enhancing drugs, but my one weakness is cheap protein from... from fast food. So I hope you can forgive me that. Now, what he's also said is, do you, and by the way, I will say this as well, I actually think McDonald's is less bad than, what do you call it, ready meals. If you actually look what's in ready meals, that is just horrific. What's all of the stabilizers and all the sort of different preservatives and flavorings in ready meals? They are the worst things you can eat, and people eat ready meals as if they're a health food. So I've got to say that, I do eat a proper home cooked meal every night as well. So, you know, I hope people can forgive that small indiscretion. And do I think trannies will be pushed into the army? Yes, I actually did a video for your super chat. You can actually go and watch my video. It's on BitChute about America's attempt to destroy its own military by progressiveness. They'll push trannies into it. They'll push non-whites into it. It'll all be about diversity quotas, and they'll push it higher and higher up the chain of command. I'll tell you now, if there was an actual ground war between Russia and America, and it was Russian troops fighting American troops, a la the fighting in the East in the Second World War, where it was street to street, house to house, you know, people kicking doors in and literally, you know, sometimes hand-to-hand combat in the streets, brutal fight for life. I don't think America troops today would stand a chance against Russian troops. I think they'd be destroyed, and I think the Chinese would destroy American troops all just as quickly as the Russians would. I think that America, when you look at what they're pushing in the armed forces, they are actively trying to weaken their own defenses. But anyway, we have come to the end of the show, so I'm going to throw it straight over to James and say, very quickly, do you have any, you gave a great summation there, but do you want to give any final thoughts and just tell us where we can find you? This 2 hours has flown by.
15 seconds on the point about the military. I was doing a TV show for a Swedish television network, and it was they took me up to Nashville where we were filming. And while we were shooting one of the scenes, there was a group of troops that walked by, and this was about 10 years ago. And the majority were non-white and women, and they were all in their fatigue. They're all in their camo, and they were out and about. And I thought at that moment, I said, you know, this isn't going to work if there is ever any sort of a ground war again. And of course, though, you know, it's interesting with the transgender thing. You'd probably rather have Bruce Jenner than your garden variety female if you're in the trenches, even if he's in drag. But anyway, listen, guys, great deal of respect and admiration. Y'all are two of the absolute best and most capable spokesmen our cause has, and it's an honor to be in league with you. ThePoliticalCesspool.org. We're a weekly show. Every Saturday night, we give a new meaning to Saturday Night Live. Every Saturday night, we're live, and of course, we've got the archive so people can catch up after the fact, anytime they want, on demand. But ThePoliticalCesspool.org. Can't take any sort of online contributions. I'm sure you guys can relate to that, but we still can take paper checks if anybody's interested. We don't have the currency that y'all do with the lemons and the Lamborghinis and all of that stuff. But do, folks, flood Mark and Jason with the currency here on these live streams and get them well supported. And I look forward to future collaborations early and often, gentlemen. Thank you again.
Thank you, brother. NoWhiteGuilt.org, theafterparty.tv. Tomorrow will be the after party. Don't know who the guest will be, but it'll be magnificent. Quick comment. I don't know if the person was asking about anthropogenic global warming. That's still hotly debated, but I think we're talking about the care for the environment and the degradation of the environment when most people say that. And yeah, we absolutely need to keep our eye on the environment. But I do think we have to be a bit circumspect when we're talking about overpopulation, because we are the only people who will refrain from reproducing to protect the environment. Everyone else will just continue to produce like rabbits until there's nothing left. At least that's been the case so far. Maybe they'll change their minds. But a big thank you to both of my brothers here and my dear Southern brother, James Edwards. Love you, and great to see you here on PWR. Support James. Should I say Mosby? Maybe support James Edwards, the new Mosby. He needs it, and they've been doing magnificent things for almost two decades on the air. So they're fantastic, and also support our great leader here on PWR, Mark Collett, and look forward to seeing everybody in the live chat again here very soon.
Well, thank you very much. And I just want to say I've missed a load of super chats which were on Odyssey. Odyssey now does their own super chats. Tiswas Tunes gave 50 Odyssey tokens. Thank you very much. Very generous. Hail, NPC123 gave 5 Odyssey tokens, said Hail James, Mark and Jason, and Johnny Kaboom, you might remember him from the PUBG games. He said the following for 5 tokens: COVID is a hoax. Tell me what happened to the flu. It can't be the distancing masks. One, that's dumb, and 2, Sweden had no masks or distancing, and they recorded no flu too. Well, thank you, Johnny Kaboom. Come back and play PUBG with me. So that brings us to the end of the show. We've got the numbers from Sven. We had nearly 1,100 watching on D-Live, Odyssey and Entropy, and we had nearly 2,000 watching on Radio Albion and listening on the audio player. So just under 3,100 people watching live tonight. Fantastic numbers again for James. Very much deserved. So that brings us to the end of the show. And before I go, I'd like to say Sunday, please, please don't forget, we have the Warzone tournament. If you can play, please do play. We're trying to get the numbers up. We can have a maximum of 150 players. We've already got 89 people signed up, but let's try and get over 100 again. That'd be brilliant to hit our all-time high. I'd really like that. Please, please join in if you can. If you can't, just watch. And on Friday, we are doing a special stream. It will be a fundraiser. All money will go to Sam. It was the PA update, but it will now be about the arrests and harassment of Sam and Laura. Laura obviously wasn't arrested, but she has been harassed. So that takes us to the end of the show. And I'd just like to say thank you to everybody. Thank you to the wonderful James Edwards. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to everyone who sent such generous donations. And thank you to everyone in the audience. This community is absolutely wonderful. I love you all. Stay strong. Keep fighting. And please don't forget, we are back on Friday night at 7 p.m. for a very important show, and back on Sunday for the Warzone tournament. Please join in both. I'll see you all again very soon.